You are now listening to the Two Dads Run podcast, just two dads who run, talking about running and being dads and some other stuff.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Two Dads Run podcast. This is Kevin.
This is Gray.
And everyone, today, very excited as we'll be speaking to someone that's actually a current American record holder and who is also eyeing the Olympic gold medal. So she is actually right now training for the Olympic trials and will be in Tokyo here shortly. But before we actually talk more about this special guest, Gray, glad to catch up with you. How's it going?
Good, man. Good. You know, it was a good week. Family's good. Everybody's healthy. We got some nice, beautiful spring weather happening here in North Carolina. Some training was pretty good. Just some nice, easy miles this week. A little bit of a taper action happening. How about you?
Same. You know, I think that's kind of been the cool thing being in North Carolina this time of year, or even this past winter. I think when everybody was getting snow, we were getting rain. But I love getting out there in the mornings and that in the rain and in the evenings as well. So. No, training's going well.
You like getting out in the rain? Because I had a dreadful time in February when it rained every freaking day.
No, dude, I definitely love the, you know, being, I guess, a larger frame size runner when it's raining and it was a bit cold. I love that versus the heat. So
I'll take it over 90 and humid as hell any day of the week for sure. So, there is one thing that we want to touch on before we get to our interview today. And that is the passing of Dick Hoyt. So we can't call ourselves the Two Dads Run podcast without paying our respects to the ultimate running dad. He passed away recently within the last week or so. By the time this drops, it'll be probably 2 weeks. But this guy was absolutely incredible and just shows the lengths that parents will go through to make their children's lives better. If you don't know his story, definitely please check it out. Dick pushed his quadriplegic son through tons of marathons. I think they did a few Ironmans, like 25 or 30 Boston marathons or something like that. I mean, and they we're talking about sub-3 marathons that he's pushing his adult quadriplegic son. I mean, just an amazing story. And it was all because his son Rick made a comment that said, you know, when we were out there running, I think they did a lacrosse fundraising race or something like that. So, Dad, when we're running, I don't feel like I'm paralyzed anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, how incredible is that? And he just wanted to give that feeling to his son as often as possible. So, rest in peace, Dick Hoyt. What an amazing story. What an amazing ambassador for running dads everywhere.
Absolutely. No, the endurance community, the running, I mean, the triathlon community is going to definitely miss Dick Hoyt. I'll tell you, the first time I actually heard the story was, again, you know, I do a lot of triathlon. So I knew of the multi-sport background or the races that they did before goodness, the running resume that they had, but
and pulling his son in a makeshift boat for the triathlons.
Amazing. His son being paraplegic, having CP, but they did a story when they competed in the Ironman World Championship in Kona. So it was several years ago on NBC, you know, their once a year special that they air. And I'll tell you that if you have not, I can't remember what exact year it was, but if you have not seen that race televised and when they actually did the story on the Hoyt family, goodness, I remember being in tears myself. And that's exactly, I mean, I would say, you know, what inspired us to do this, the Two Dads Run podcast. It wasn't just, hey, we're just, you know, by chance, two dads. It's the connection that we have with our daughters and what type of role model we want to be for them. And I read an article after his passing, and there's a lot of people in the sport that, you know, that wrote their well wishes for the family. And there was something that stuck out. And one of those quotes was, being a great father means you teach, protect, sacrifice, and support. And it was just, you know, amazing to see someone like Dick Hoyt exemplify that for people like you and I. And it's, yeah, you know, so, you know, rest in peace.
Absolutely. And,
yeah.
Yeah. So. Rest in peace, Mr. Hoyt. And on a much lighter note, we'll go ahead and get to our interview today. In case you haven't already done the math and figured out who our guest is today, who is our guest, Kevin?
So Kiera D'Amato will be joining us. We'll get the opportunity to listen to her talk about some of the things that she's been doing with her family throughout this pandemic. But more importantly, I mean, Kiera does quite a bit has quite a bit of responsibilities. She's a wife, she's a mother, she's a real estate agent, and she's a badass runner. She currently holds the American 10 miler right now.
For women's and only 10 miler. Yep.
Exactly. Road race. Exactly. And she's going to be competing here at the Olympic trials. And as we mentioned, she has her eyes set on Olympic gold. So why don't you guys go ahead, sit back, have some fun with us, and let's have a good time with Kiera.
All right, so joining us today, we have the American record holder in the women's only 10 mile. She holds PRs of 2 hours and 22 minutes in the marathon, 1 hour, 8 minutes, 57 seconds for the half marathon, 15:04 for the 5K. She's one of Nike's newest athletes, and if that's not badass enough for you, she is a mom of two and a full-time realtor. I am talking about none other than Kiera D'Amato. Welcome to the show, Kiera.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm giggling to myself. I hope I didn't interrupt your introduction. When you said American record holder, it just made me giggle. Like, that's never going to feel normal for me.
It shouldn't. That's an amazing accomplishment. So cool. So we are super excited to have you on the show today. And since we, you know, get right into the tough topics here on the Two Dads Run podcast, tell me about this snack madness bracket that you have started with your family. How did that get started? Whose brainchild was that?
So it kind of routed. This is actually really funny where the core of it was. My husband got like a new dry erase board to organize his thoughts. So he was looking for excuses to use it. And so he brought it upstairs during dessert time, and he made like a cookie ranking system. So this is like the original one. And we had a Girl Scouts, Oreos, and then he threw in an air cookie, which is nothing. He just did that to try to fool my kids, I guess. But so that, I think he was just looking for an excuse to use that. But the kids got so into it, and we started realizing like, it's actually like, I don't know, we're going through like scientific methods, and there's like, I don't know what they're learning, but it felt like they were learning something while eating these cookies. So then we decided to go into like the Oreo bracket, so Oreo Madness ranking system, and we had so much fun with that. We went into Cheerios and then Goldfish. So we're coming off the Goldfish now. We're thinking of our next one. So I have a couple ideas for the next one. So we just had so much fun with it. And actually part of the problem is that we're an even number, so there's, you know, two of us and two
need
kids.
A tiebreaker, yeah.
So we had so many ties, so we were thinking of these ridiculous tiebreakers, but my dad's in town visiting. He's already gotten vaccinated, so he was able to come visit us, and so now we're really excited that we won't have to go into the tiebreakers because there will be five of us, so yeah.
Well, that'd be cool. So give us a scoop here. What are some of the ideas for some of the forthcoming Madness Challenge or Madness Snack Madness brackets?
So I really want to do, here are the ones that I think are not going to make it, but we really want to do Doritos or like a Pringles. I think that would be very yummy. And Pop-Tarts is another one. I haven't had a Pop-Tart since like eighth grade, so the thought of this is just making me hungry and very excited.
Pop-Tart's a solid choice, yeah.
It's real quick, yeah, what is the Pop-Tart, though, that comes to mind when you think of Pop-Tarts? I haven't had any in a while, but there's always one. I can even taste it on my tongue.
The one for me is a strawberry filling with frosting, but I think, like, the most memorable one are, like, the brown sugar ones,
yes,
or the maple sugar. Which one for you?
The brown sugar. I just remember turning it upside down so I could have that brown, hard glaze, that taste of that brown sugar. So, no, that's funny.
It's so good. But my dad, he's gluten-free. So some of those are thrown out because of that. So I think we may do either, I'm actually leaning towards apples. I know that's not as like glamorous as Oreos, but there's so many different types of apples. And whenever I'm there, I'm like, eh, which one should I get? These are bigger. These are smaller. These are organic. These are cheaper. So this might actually solve some of my shopping woes in the future to put the whole family through an apple taste test. So that's what I'm leaning towards. But then ice cream, you know, I eat, like ice cream would be a good choice too.
You know, it's funny because you mentioned everything you're talking about. This is something within the last week that we've been discussing in our household. So I went to went to the grocery store. The wife wanted some ice cream. And typically, if I'm a do sweets, which I'm not a big sweet fan myself, I'm a do high end. And her and I are always debating where she doesn't mind the actual the off brand, the store actual ice cream. I'm like, no. It's got to be the most expensive one in the freezer because you can actually taste the difference. But that's hilarious. And you mentioned the Goldfish. So we have a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old, two daughters. And with Goldfish, so one, she will not eat any Goldfish unless it's the rainbow type. I mean, they all have the same type of flavor. And then the new one that just came out not too long ago, which was the, I think it's the pizza flavor. So one will eat the pizza flavor, one will actually only eat the rainbow. But that's neat. I mean, especially, you know, with the pandemic and really, I think what has been really neat is it's allowed families to come closer with one another and just kind of spark up some of these fun ideas to just allow time to pass by.
It has been fun. And just, coming up with new things during the pandemic when everything's starting to get a little stale is just fun. And I have to say, like, I would appreciate it. I put it all up on Instagram. And just, like, people reaching out and telling me their, like, Oreo stories or something along those lines has been really fun just to connect to other people that way, too. Or then their family will do their own version and they'll tell us. But it's really helped me out because now when I go to the grocery store and I'm in the Oreo aisle looking at, like, 50 different flavors, I think actually maybe only 25, I probably exaggerated. But
that's okay.
But I know which ones I want to lean towards. You know, like, before you just sit there and stare. But now, like, if I'm in the Cheerio aisle, I know because I've tasted them all which ones I want to get. So,
well, and fun fact, the Cheerio challenge was actually the first time that you and I connected. We were talking about how I disregarded your entire bracket because chocolate Cheerios were not included. And then we started exchanging some messages about Cheerios. So that.
Yes. And you bring up a very valid point. So there are a lot of reasons that all of my challenges should just be completely thrown out, largely because like half of the judging is from kids that, one doesn't even really remember which one we're on. She just picked it by the color of the box. So there's definitely some there's funny judging business going on. But, no, I appreciate that feedback. I'm a huge chocolate fan, too. So that was kind of a fatal error for that one. I agree.
So let's do this because I think all of our listeners want to hear more about your running. And it's for all our listeners. It's lunchtime for all of us right now. I haven't had anything to eat since this morning. Some avocado toast with some cayenne pepper. That's about it. And
of course, you've had avocado toast.
So let's talk about some good stuff here. You know, really just as far as Kiara, you know, your running background, I mean, anybody can pull up the information on you. I mean, because it's just so impressive resume that you have. But can you talk to us how it all started? Where did it begin? And, you know, at what time in your life did you decide, you know what, running is actually probably something that I'll just kind of stick with amongst, you know, some of the other sports that I know that you were probably doing coming up?
Yeah. Growing up, I played every sport that I could sign up for. Like, and my brothers would sign up for a sport, and I would be like, Mom, Dad, I want to play that too. I played everything growing up, and I just, you know, I definitely would just consider myself an athlete. And really, soccer was probably my favorite. And I had a coach who was from France who was really all in on physical fitness, and he was so convinced that if we could outrun a team, we were the superior team. And we could outrun any team, but we always got beat because we were working so hard on running. We just like neglected the, the ball handling skills or whatever. But he's the one that pulled, I think this was like 7th or 8th grade. He pulled my mom aside and said, "Hey, do you want to have Kira go to college on scholarship?" And she was like, "Oh yeah, how do I do that?" And he's like, "I have a huge tip for you." And she thought he was going to say like, go to this, camp, get this trainer, join this team, do this in high school. And he said, when she gets to high school, join the cross country team. Wow. And definitely not what my mom was expecting to hear. But and she kind of brushed it off. She didn't really know what that meant. But when I got to high school, I joined the cross country team really just to impress the soccer coach. I wanted him to see that I was working on the off season and, you know, that I was fit. And I, my first race, I went out and won it. And then I just, I felt like I just found it. Like I finally found my people that I felt like I connected with so much on a deeper level than I'd kind of ever felt in my life. And then I found this sport that I just love to do, whether people are around or I was running by myself. And I remember going through some things like in my life then, like my parents were going through a divorce, and I found like, I just found like learning how to put running in my life at that time. If I ever felt like sad or lonely or confused, I would just go out for a run. And I just had never found something in my life that just worked on so many different levels like that, I guess, that, I mean, I just fell in love, and it was like game over, like for all the other sports at that point. Like once I found running, I just knew that was my thing. But yeah, I ran all through high school and then was lucky enough to run on scholarship, like my soccer coach predicted, for American University in Washington, D.C., and ran all through college too. So, but yeah, that's how I got started.
Awesome. Yeah, that, you know, running is definitely, for me and Kevin both, it's one of those, you know, kind of decompression periods where we can get out and kind of let go of this, escape, you know, the career and, you know, everything else that's going on in our lives. So yeah, I mean, I'm glad to hear, I knew this going in, but I'm glad to hear that it's kind of a universal feeling for a lot of folks.
And I think also, like, even now, I feel like that's my primary reason why I run too, is because I love it. I love that space I have. And I think just learning that at such a young age, I've had that throughout my whole life, which has been a really helpful thing just for the way that I process things, my mentality, how I feel with things, my confidence. So, I'm so thankful that I found something like that in my life at such a young age.
So you ran for American University, and Matthew Centuritz Sr. was your coach, correct?
Correct. Yep.
Okay. And then so after you finished off with American, did you do some post-collegiate running in between, you know, before we kind of shut everything down for a few years?
Yeah, I did. I ran for a group in the D.C. area called D.C. Elite, and it was coached by my now coach, Scott Roscoe. Alan Webb was kind of like the headline runner of that group.
Oh, yeah.
But there was a number of runners from 400-meter hurdlers to marathoners, so it was really nice that I just had a lot of different people to run with and people to kick my butt around the track. And it was a really fun group. Like everyone was just really fun people. So that was, I had a lot of fun.
Excellent. So then as you know, your story is pretty well known at this point. You know, there was a pretty long break from running. What was it that led to that? You know, was it, do you feel like you had lost a part of yourself while you were outside of running? And was it, you know, mentally beneficial, or was there some other reason for it?
Yeah, well, I was originally pushed out due to injury. I had, I think it's called a tarsal coalition. It's kind of like my foot or ankle, where I needed to get surgery to fix it, or else I just have kind of perpetual stress fractures. But only my insurance didn't cover it at the time, so I wasn't able to get it. So I kind of was forced out, and then my plan was, well, I'll just go get a job in corporate America, get much better insurance, and then I'll come back. But kind of like the year of being injured, and just it's tough, you know, like when you love something so much and it feels like it's kind of taken away from you. Like it really, like you just said, it was a really strange transition period. And I felt like running kind of broke up with me. So it kind of, it was just raw and it really hurt. So kind of moving on to something else was healthy for me at the time. But also, like you said, it was really confusing too, because my whole life I was always Kira the runner, and now I'm Kira the runner that doesn't run. So it was a weird transition. But eventually I got the surgery and I started putting running back in my life in a very low key way. At the core of me, I love to race. So pretty much during that time, I had no structure, but I would just sign up for whatever race, go to the race and be like, "Woo, I'm out of shape." And then wait till the next race to find that out again. I wasn't really doing anything about it. But during that time also, I got married to my husband, Anthony. He was in the military, so we were moving around. We had two kids, and, you know, life just was busy. And my husband also really liked to run, so we would run as, like, our little dates or whatever, or I'd have a girlfriend that wanted to go for a run. So I was just running for fun. But then I got obsessive for, like, with CrossFit in there. I got into, like, a big cycling years in there. So I was finding other ways to really stay active, but I just hadn't quite all healed, I guess, from that running breakup. So I wasn't going too hard at it, I guess. But yeah, it was weird. I call it like my 10-year halftime show. You know, I'm just in the locker room, just chilling, chugging the Gatorade in the back, just waiting for my second half.
So, you know, isn't it funny how those things tend to play out where you had the cross country and then you had American University and then even some of that post-collegiate running and then the injury and then the surgery and what that does to you mentally, and you start to doubt and question almost kind of the path that you thought was going to be there, and then to the point where you're even thinking about corporate America. And so then you found these different ways to really just kind of maybe embrace that time period. It opened it up for you to meet your now husband. Being married and actually being a military brat myself, I can imagine, you know, I got to see my mother over the last 30 something years be a military spouse and how difficult that was, but how much stronger that made you mentally. And I guess, would that be safe to say that it really kind of probably toughened you up mentally during that time period to maybe enter back into the sport, to even be that more aggressive and maybe even appreciative athlete?
Yeah, definitely. Military spouses are like the toughest people in the world.
Badasses, you are.
Like,
sure.
And I feel like I can't quite fully claim myself as that. My husband's now just in the Guard. And I mean, he, in the first like 2 years of my daughter's life, he was gone for over a year of that. And that was really hard. But I feel like I didn't quite thrive during that time. It was like a big struggle for me. So I'm not going to claim that I was like tough military spouses, but it definitely like, it helps you realize like what's important and what is like struggle, right? Like when I get into a workout and I'm really hurting, like it's like a temporary pain, right? Like everything's going to be fine when I'm done. I can work through this. It's fine. But you know, when your husband's gone and you have a newborn that's getting up every 2 hours and then like a 2-year-old that you better be up at 6 a.m. That's like a real.
Oh, yeah.
I do not miss those days. I do not miss the infant days.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Those are really hard. They were really hard.
So tough.
But it puts the struggle, like, it just keeps everything in perspective, right? And I don't know, when I'm, really hurting in the middle of the marathon, I'm like, well, at least it's not 2 a.m. and I'm up trying to clean up poop and throw up in the house, it's like, this isn't as bad, but yeah, I think just that time period and removing myself from the sport and kind of letting all of that heal, like, I did hit a lot of my goals in the first time, and I healed from it, like, I learned that I came up short, and I was okay. So now coming back into it now, like, I know what it feels like to come up short, and that sucks. I don't want that to ever happen again. But I also know, like, I've come up short before, and I was okay. So it gives me this freedom now that I'm not really afraid to fail. And it just, it allows me to take risks and just go for it. And I don't know, it's kind of, it's just a really freeing feeling, I guess. So I don't know if I'd recommend my path to everyone with running, but I do think I've like gotten a lot of good from the way that I've my strange journey has gone.
Yeah, I mean, I can see how freedom would be the perfect term for that, because you've been there, you stepped away for a while, and now you have a, you know, with age, I mean, because we're in the same age demographic, the three of us. So yeah, I mean, age, you get a little bit a little bit wiser. You know, things change perspective a little bit. You know, things that were important to me at, you know, 20 or nowhere near on my priority list at 38. So that has to play into it a little bit.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more with you. Yeah. And also, like, I'm not burned out, you know, like, because I took a decade off, like, all of this feels relatively new. It's exciting. Like, I don't mind working through the thing. Like, it does. I do feel like running is a gift, too, that I get to get up and do every day. It doesn't feel like a forced job or anything like that. So I think there, you know, the route I took, I don't know. I took a funny path, but but it worked for me, I guess.
So was the comeback all fueled by, you know, a feeling of unfinished business, or, you know, was it, did you just want to come back and smash some PRs and break some records? What was the driving factor there?
Yeah, you know, it wasn't even like an intentional comeback. I, like after having my second child, my daughter Quinn, then it was like, okay, I should probably get back into running and just get into shape again, you know, just get back into like pre-pregnancy shape. So I started running just for health reasons initially. And then when my husband's deployed, I was running for like mental health reasons. And then somewhere along the line, I found myself, like I was in a workout and I ran like a 5K PR and like 5K repeat. And I was like, whoa, like I'm in good shape. This feels a little crazy. And that's, I guess, when the official, like, unfinished business comeback started. Like, I kind of feel like, in a way, I just fell back. And I don't know if this is a healthy thing or not, but not having goals for a while and just running because I loved it, like, there was no pressure to progress at a certain way or to be ready by a certain time. Like, I really liked seeing the progress and the improvement, and I was living for each day, each week, each month to be a little bit better than the last. But it was all about like the grind and the work and not so much like where I was going. So I think that kept all the pressure off for a while. And then the unfinished business, when I found that I was better, you know, I was running times that were better than I was at my peak, then it was like, oh my goodness, everything's back on the table and all that stuff that was the unfinished business. I have a second shot at that. And that's when it started becoming like really exciting, and I started getting like more aggressive about those goals. But funny path, man.
So I'm curious, as far as, I mean, granted, the technology and just obviously time has changed a lot of things from when we all first started running, when you first started running, to now. The second act, and as you're talking, I'm envisioning like Rocky coming back in the ring. It's like I'm just gonna take down, you know, the next opponent here. So that's awesome. So I'm curious, as far as we've been talking about mindset a little bit. What things have you done, Kara, to prepare your mind and to prepare your body that for this? I mean, you accomplished the American record holder, Olympic gold, obviously in the future. I would have to assume that's the case, but what are you doing differently now this go round mentally to prepare for these types of races, for these types of practices that are probably more enduring than they were before? So just curious as far as the difference now and what you're doing to mentally prepare.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you specified mentally and physically, because for me, the physical preparation, I mean, it's been much different, but it almost feels easier because that's just, you know, run this many miles. Okay, check, move on. But the mental preparation has been much tougher, and it's taken years. Like, I think I was in pretty close to as good of shape in 2019 as I was in 2020, but I just think mentally I wasn't quite ready for that breakout. Like, I hadn't given myself permission to compete at that level. And for so long, like, and I know kind of everyone, maybe not everyone, but a lot of people, you know, the imposter syndrome, you know, so that was like my first hurdle. Is I was a mom and I was a realtor. Like, how can I compete on the elite level? You know, that was hard to wrap my head around. And just knowing that Kira in her 20s, like, my life revolved around running. Everything was all about running. And my life does not revolve around running anymore. You know, I take it really seriously, and it's a huge part, but it doesn't revolve around running. So it was hard to wrap my head around how can I be better now when I'm doing more and I'm putting more effort, but it just, I felt like I wasn't kind of trying as hard. So that was hard just to accept. But you know, I started accepting that there's so many different ways to get there. And I've learned so much about myself that, like, when I'm having fun, like, don't stand in my way, you know? So I've really concentrated to make sure that my comeback has been fun and I've kept it lighthearted. And I've just made sure that, like, when I feel like I get to go out for a run, I am so excited and just happy to be there. And just that perspective has really kept, like, the pressure off. And, you know, when, I don't know, I'm listening to a lot of podcasts and a lot of things, like, during my runs, which just make it more enjoyable to do. But then, you know, I've learned different lessons about competing and just, you know, I've pulled a lot of confidence from my training. And I think I was so scared to fail in my first round that I didn't give myself, like, full permission to, like, go after it. So, yeah, it's been, and kind of older, wiser, too, I guess, that plays into it also. But, yeah, I feel like a lot has changed, and I'm a very different person than my, like, here in my 20s. So I don't know. It's a world different. And I think also, like, I come in from, like, a run, a workout, or a race, and my kids were like, I mean, they were kind of, they're like, hey, what took you so long? Like, how'd it go? You know, and I'll be like, good, and start talking about it. And they're like, yeah, we don't care. Can we have some more? You know? Like, we actually were just saying that to be nice, you know? So let's move past that. But so I think that that, like, keeping me humble in that aspect really helps too. Just, I don't know, take some of the pressure off. But, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of an ever-changing thing, and I feel like I'm still learning a lot just on the mental aspect, like every day, every week, every year. But yeah, a work in progress, I guess.
That's great. So when you're out there running now that you have a husband and you do have children, how much do they play in your mind when you are running in some of these very difficult, challenging races where you've got these women that want to take you down? They know what you're about. They know what you're capable of doing. But how much motivation does the family play for you now?
Yeah, a lot. Like, I think one of the first hurdles running and being a mom is going through that mom guilt, right? Like, I remember feeling so guilty. Like, when I first started running, that I'd be gone for 10 or 20 minutes and I wouldn't be with, like, my child. Like, I felt like I wasn't in the right place at the time. And then I started learning, like, it's okay that I have my own things and that, you know, if I'm a happier person, I can be a better mom. Like, I think being a good runner and a good mom really go hand in hand for me personally. And when I'm at a race, like, I still have a little bit of that mom guilt, but it, like, is fueled. Like, if I'm going to spend a weekend away from my family for this, I'm not going to waste this opportunity. So, like, I remember specifically at the marathon project where I ran 2:22, I had so much of that because you fly out early to get ready and to get adjusted to the time change. And since it's from coast to coast, I gave myself a little bit of extra time just to be there and be ready. But just sitting in the hotel room waiting for a race when I should, you know, be at home with my family, I just thought I better make the most of this opportunity because I am not with my kids and that's really where I want to be. But yeah, so I feel like it's a healthy amount of fuel because then also I know if I'm first or I'm last, they're really not going to care. I'm still going to be their mom and we just all move on, you know?
No, that's great.
Are they aware of how awesome your career is going here lately?
Yes and no. Like, they've brought up things that, you know, they would tell their teacher that I got an American record. But then sometimes they tell their teachers that I'm, like, you know, hold the Earth record or, you know. So it's like they sometimes get some of the details right and then sometimes have no idea what's going on. But,
yeah. The Earth record sounds like a good one.
Yeah, I like Earth record. That's good. I might use that in everyday life.
I'll try to go for some Earth records too. But yeah, it's like, I think it's good that they don't quite know what's going on. It kind of just keeps everything in perspective.
Now, when you're running, so just again, yeah, I've got a 7 and 5 year old, and one of my favorite things that I like to do is take my girls out running in the morning. And now that it's starting to warm up, I mean, they're early risers. Just as you were mentioning with your kids, when they're early and growing, every 2 hours they're waking up, and they're still the same way. So I was like, all right, if you girls are going to wake up early, you're going to wake up early with dad, and we're going to go do something productive, like go run. Do you take your kids with you running in the morning? Do you see them loving, you know, really kind of liking the sport? Because, you know, for what it is, a lot of our friends look at us like we're crazy because why are you going out and running, you know, when you could be doing something else? Yeah. There's a perfectly, you know, nice, comfortable couch you could be sitting on. But do you see your kids starting to, you know, enjoy the sport and potentially following, you know, your footsteps and looking at you as their hero? Do you see that in them now?
Yeah, I do a little bit. Like my son said something to my husband, like, I think it was a month ago. We were signing him up for soccer, and he was like, Dad, I'm not really into the team sports. You know, like, I'm more into like running. I don't even know what that means. I don't even think he knows what that means. But I don't know, like, pretty much every night after our like snack madness challenges, they would run laps in the house. And I don't know. I don't know if that's influenced by me going out and running laps or what, but if we go outside and play, we'll go to a playground, and it starts with them like on the swings or on the slide, and then they'll just start running laps around the whole playground. So all the quote unquote like normal kids are playing like on the playground equipment. My kids are like, hey mom, count how many laps I do. So yeah, I see it in them, but I also like, I don't ever want to push them into anything. And I think part of the reason why I clung so hard to running is like, I feel like I found it and it was my thing. And so, you know, I hope, you know, if it's running, awesome, because I know about that, but I just hope they find, you know, their, whatever their running or their passion is in their life. Because that's a really magical thing. Like having those mornings with your daughters, you get to go out and run around. Like those are stuff you're never going to forget. That's really special.
Yeah, with Instagram and Facebook, it's neat to just kind of capture those moments and to be able to, you know, we get those memories on Facebook and you get to see, oh, 2 years ago, I remember buying those little pair of Nike running shoes and they no longer fit. They're still in the house. They're still in the cubby that we need to throw out. We have yet to do so.
Oh, but, I know. I have those too. And kids' shoes, yeah, they last like a week. Like perfect. I'll get them like two sizes too big. They'll grow into them, and then like a week later, they're like already busting out of the seams. Like, man.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm curious also. So, Kira, where you're at right now, you have a lot of women that are wanting to dethrone you. You know, you've got people that want to take that American record holder title away from you, and people and women that are preventing you from accomplishing your goals. But also, there's a lot of the camaraderie. People in the sport, they like to see people just accomplish the unimaginable, that impossible. I don't believe in the impossible, but with that camaraderie, are there any athletes within the sport right now that you look up to as possibly a hero, or is there a mentor in the sport that's also, you know, trying to accomplish somewhat of the same goals that you are right now, where you guys have partnered up and you've kind of leaned on one another for this journey? Because again, the path you're on is very unique. Not many people in the world will be able to actually ever encounter. So just curious in that area.
Yeah, you know, I've found a lot of friendships through this path with women kind of on a very similar path. And I have to say, like, through COVID, it's really been a special, like, the women's running scene is really special that I haven't felt, like, as, like, directly competitive with anyone. And maybe just because I'm in a different phase of my life than some of them a little bit. But I feel like we're all competing to raise the level of like the women's American distance, just standards in general. And that's a really special thing. Like, I remember the Marathon Project, just having a few women in my pace group and seeing like Kellen go off. I was so excited for Kellen to go after it. And I was excited that I was running with these girls. And if we could all help each other to the finish line. I know we all wanted to beat each other too, and that's fair. I don't blame anyone for wanting to beat me at all, because I want to beat everyone
too. You're not there to hold hands.
I know, we're not there to hold hands. We're there to race, you know, but like if we can get there and help each other to that, I'm totally cool with that. But also, I mean, I'm one of the most competitive people you ever meet in your whole life. So I want to beat everyone, but I also know that there's a way we can all work together to all find our best as well. And maybe that's what COVID's done, is there hasn't been any races where it really matters the way you finish. It's really all about been about the time. So it's like everyone can run fast and everyone can be happy, and that's fine. We weren't competing for three positions on Olympic team, you know, at the end of 2020. But there's some really, really special women in the American distance, just women community. And I've really, like, enjoyed getting to know those people, and I feel like they've really helped me with my journey and kind of take it to the next level. So it's been really cool, but it's also strange because a couple of years ago, these women were, I was just watching them being like, wow, like, they're really destroying it. This is awesome. Like, I honestly, in a million years, never thought I'd be back to being, like, a peer of theirs or a competitor. So, yeah, it's cool though. But you know, each of these women that I've met and gotten to know, it's like, this is what makes them successful. You know, it's like, I can get to know their personality and see their drive and their hunger and their passion and be like, I get that, you know, I have that too, but I see why she's here where she is. But
yeah, it's really an awesome time for American women's distance running. I mean, it's just unbelievable what you all are doing. It's awesome to see it. It really is. So earlier you used the term breakout year of 2020. I'm going to say dominant year. But your dominant, you know, your dominant 2020 leads to a sponsorship with Nike. How did that come about? How long was that in the works?
Yeah, the sponsorship discussions were probably three or four, maybe even five months before I announced. I was so nervous to rock the boat though. So I really took my time, and I'm appreciative that, you know, especially Nike was really patient with me too, because everything I was doing was working. So I really didn't want to change anything. And, you know, I just didn't know if by signing there would be new pressure or new restrictions, or they, you know, they'd want me to do something a certain way. So I was really hesitant to go down that path. But I, you know, kind of the more I talk to Nike, and they're like, listen, we don't want you to change anything. Like, we don't want you to move. We don't want you to stop real estate. We don't want you to do anything, but just, we will represent you. And we feel like we can take you to the next level by, you know, providing more resources and everything. So, but I just, during the whole process, like, I kept going back to, why am I running? Like, I'd ask myself that, like, whenever I had a question or, like, you know, I was trying to feel through something, like, why am I doing this? And my answer was always to run as fast as I can. Like, and that it wasn't to get a sponsor. It wasn't to do, like, XYZ or whatever. It was always, like, I have my real estate and that's my career, and my running is my hobby that I take really seriously. I want to see how fast I can run, but that's it, you know. So I didn't want to have any other kind of restrictions on that. But I'm so appreciative of Nike's support, and they love that I'm doing it my way, and they want me to keep doing it my way. They didn't want to change anything, but now I'm a Nike athlete, so that's pretty wild, man.
It, what's been so far your most memorable moment being a Nike athlete now?
I think that it didn't really feel real until I did the Texas qualifier meet at the end of February, and that was my first race. And like showing up in actually like a cohesive like race kit, not just like, what do I feel like running in today? Like having like a race jersey and like a warm up uniform and seeing like my name and the results next to Nike. That's when it kind of like all hit me. But, and then when I came home from that race, they sent me like a welcome gift, which was this like nice, like carved box with a big swoosh on the top, and it had like my name like engraved in it and a nice little message that you can keep all your medals like in this box. And like that really hit me too, that I'm now part of like that Nike family. And yeah, it's really, it's been an exciting journey. It wasn't my plan to be here, but I am so thankful and appreciative and excited and proud that this is where I am right now.
So you wrote a letter to yourself before your first race as a pro. Where was your, well, first of all, was that Trials for Miles in Texas?
Yes.
Is that correct? And you ran the 10K, right?
Yes, I ran the 10K.
Okay. So what was going through your head as you wrote it? What was the purpose for it? I mean, was it just something to look back on for posterity or?
Yeah, you know, we've actually, a photographer, one of like just an awesome photographer, but she does a lot of track and field and running shoots. Her name is Aisha Wright. I think on Instagram, she's AI Shoots is her name. But she was asking if she could do like a little, like a shoot on me before like that weekend she was going to be in town. And then she said, you know, I think it would be really cool. I think people would be really interested to hear like what you're thinking about right now going into your first race as a professional runner. Like you have a very unique path and a unique perspective. And I don't think anyone quite knows what it feels like to be 36 and running their first like race as a professional athlete. So that was her idea. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. And I just, for me down the line, just looking back at that moment, just trying to keep everything in perspective. Cause I feel like when I'm kind of stay true to like who I am and what I represent and what I believe in, I do really well. So once you said that, I thought that was a cool idea. So I did it, and I'm tearing up writing the letter before this race, just because like, I don't know, just reflecting on my whole journey. Like, I mean, ever since I was very, very little, I wanted to be a professional athlete. That's what I wrote all of my like elementary school reports about, you know, when you dream about your perfect job. So I'd always wanted my life to take, you know, be on this path, but, you know, I took the scenic route to get there, I guess. But yeah, it was pretty cool. And just reading the letter back now and just having those like pre-race jitters and just excitement and whatever,
wait till 10 years from now when you're looking at it.
I know, that's funny.
So how did the 10,000 at Trials for Miles go? How did you feel about your performance there?
I think I got the biggest checkbox. You know, I finally got a time that counts for the trials, so I've officially qualified for the Olympic trials. So
congratulations.
That was the biggest thing. But I definitely was disappointed. I thought I was in a lot better shape, and I think like the heat and humidity just like really knocked me out that race. I feel like I'm still actually recovering a little bit from that. I just probably went to the well a little bit too hard when I was used to like 20, 30 degree weather. Yeah,
I was just about to say it. I'll tell you, my first run, we had a little warm stretch here in North Carolina, and it was like all of a sudden 80 degrees, and you know. So I, you know, went for a shirtless run as I love to do in the summertime. And I was just like, I was not at all prepared for that.
Yeah, like, holy it really smokes, not, it's yeah. hot. Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly how I felt. Like I got into the race and I just started just overheating. Like my body just felt so hot. Like the pace was feeling fine, but I was just feeling so hot. So it didn't go, I mean, I didn't hit my time goal or, you know, I was trying also to get the Olympic standard and that did not happen. But you know, I got my ticket to the trial. So I guess that was like the most important thing and, you know, keep moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, that time for the trials is, I guess the most important piece. So gotta run it to be there, huh?
Exactly. I feel like, you know, you're going to have to be in that kind of shape come the trials to make the team. You know, you got to be in Olympic standard shape anyway. So it's going to be such a, I think, a quick race and so competitive that, you know, I feel like I still have loads of time to get there.
You know, what I'm impressed, Kira, is just listening, you know, to you and having an awesome conversation is, you're having fun, but you're still taking everything very serious, and that's very hard to do. And you know, we touched base on it a little bit, but again, you being a mother of two, a spouse, a realtor, Olympic gold medalist, hopefully here soon. How are you doing? How are you managing all of that right now? So our listeners know, Kiara is actually on her way to do a showing. Yes, she is on her way to do a showing. So how do you do that? How do you compartmentalize work, family? Just, you know, for some of our listeners out there, for you know, the moms out there that they, you know, the working moms, the stay at home moms, I'm curious to know how do you manage to do this on a day to day, week to week basis?
Yeah, I wish I had a magic formula. Like, I feel like my answer is going to be such a letdown, but I'm not perfect. Like, I need a lot of help. I ask for a lot of help. I lean on a lot of people, and my personality, I'm kind of more of like a type A person, so it's not natural and it's not easy for me to ask for help. But I've realized like how much more I can accomplish being part of a team than just by myself. So, but you know, I think I do a good job with different like systems in place. So with whatever I'm doing, I can be really present in the moment. You know, I make a lot of lists. I write myself emails. I have a certain structure and routine to my day to help just keep things in order. But, I think by, you know, just like when I'm with my kids, like I want to be fully present. So I feel like that's like a really great time. So I try to, if there's not like a real estate call coming in, I'll leave my phone in the other room or make a list of things that I need to do, you know, after they go to bed, just to make sure that I don't feel stressed. I'm going to forget something. I have to be present. And with running, like I usually run with my phone, not on workout days, but just on my, you know, my recovery runs and everything. Cause then I feel like a little bit of relief. Like if there was an emergency at their school or a real estate, important real estate call came in, I could just stop running and answer that. So I don't know. I just try to put systems in place so I can, you know, just feel the most present in the times and have kind of little safeguards with that. But I don't know. Like I think the biggest thing is like, you know, when you wake up, or like my husband and I are talking the night before, and it's kind of like, okay, what are the most important things that we need to, we can't move around. And then we kind of work that out. And then you kind of just fill everything in based on priority. So our number one is always family, and number two is career. And then number three are passions or outside things. So when you put things in your life in that order, it just seems to fit a little bit better. It kind of just makes a little bit more sense. But yeah, I don't know. I wish I had a better answer. I always tell myself like it helps when it's like, when am I going to run, and not a, if am I going to run. So when I know that it's just when in my day, it makes it easier. Like, is there going to be time to run today? I don't give myself that way out. It's like, when am I going to run? Well, if the only time is at 4 a.m., I'll be getting up at 4 a.m. Like if it's at noon or it's at 7 or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think it helps that I enjoy what I'm surrounded by. I love every part of what I'm doing, so it makes it a little easier to kind of work really hard. But I don't know. How about you guys? Do you guys have the answer to that? I feel like I'm just rambling.
No, well, that's, you know, you said you don't have the magic formula, and while there might not be a magic formula, that's a very realistic answer. Yeah. In one of our other episodes, I talk about how one of my least favorite things is the I don't have time excuse, and you are the walking personification of that. You know, it's not that you don't have time, because you do, you just didn't make it a priority. So what are we going to, what are we going to prioritize that day?
I'm so glad you said that too, because I learned, like, one of my best friends, probably like, I don't know, 5 or 10 years ago, she had learned from, I don't know, a therapist or someone, that if you catch yourself saying, I didn't have time for that today, I didn't have time for that today, switch around the words for, I didn't make that a priority today. Mm-hmm. And if that feels like, and that's okay. If like, you know, running is not a priority today, that's okay. Leave it out. You're not a bad person. But if you can say it that way and you don't truly feel that way, well, you got to think about how to shift around some other things to make sure, to make sure that you're kind of putting your priorities in the right spot. But so yeah, whenever I find myself saying that a lot, then I switch it and just do a little check. Like, am I okay saying this wasn't a priority, or, you know, is that excuse just too easy to use, you know, to brush things off? So
no, I think it's perfect. So to wrap us up, we'll leave you with a softball here. What is your favorite Nike shoe to train in, and then follow that up with race in?
So I'm obsessed with the Nike Zoom Fly. I'm on Strava and I track everything obsessively on Strava, but I don't like update my shoes I've been running in each day. So I now have, I think I haven't updated it in like over a year and a half, but I think I have close to 9,000 miles in my Nike, Nike Zoom Fly. So people are like, whoa, like what shoe is that? Like, I want to get a shoe that can hold 9,000, and it's probably been about Prius, like 900.
just a thread at this point, goodness. a single thread left.
Yeah, that's all there is. But yeah, so the Nike Zoom Fly, I love it. I love how it's a lighter shoe, it's neutral, and it has that plate, so you get a little bit of that sensation of just kind of being pushed forward. But yeah, that's my favorite shoe. And then my favorite racer is the Vaporfly Next Percent. So that's my go-to shoe for like a road race.
Yeah, I did my second run. I just recently got a pair of Vaporfly Next Percents, the first run I was not in love. I was like, what's the big deal about this shoe? I don't understand. But then yesterday I gave it another shot and it was phenomenal. And I don't run nearly as fast as you do. So,
but still it helps. I think it just helps, you know, just move you from your heel to your toes a little bit quicker. So it's just less time on ground. But yeah, I love that shoe. And it's just really comfortable too. So Nike makes a good shoe.
So Kiera, we appreciate the time, and I know Grace said had a softball. So just last and real quick, what does the future hold for you?
So everything I'm doing now is gearing up towards track trials in June in Eugene. So I haven't quite figured out if I'm going to do both the 5 and the 10K or just the 10K, but ideally I'd be doing both. I feel like having two shots to make an Olympic team is better than one. So why would I not try for that? And then I'll transition, we'll say after the Olympic Games in August, I'll transition back to road racing. And I really want to do another marathon, another half marathon. I think that all of my PRs in the road are still soft. I think I can run a lot faster than all of that. So that is real exciting. So I'm excited when track's done to get back to the road. So, but yeah, good times ahead, I should say, right?
Well, we will definitely be keeping up with your progress and cheering you on here from North Carolina. You definitely have a couple of fans in us. So we're very thankful for your time. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And if you guys are ever up in the Richmond area, let me know.
Absolutely.
Deal. Thanks, Kiera.
Bye.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for joining us as we had the opportunity to speak to Kiera D'Amato. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast. Also, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at Two Dads Run Podcast. Until next time, talk to you later.
See you guys.